Accession number 9424, Reel 7.
Mr. Cooper, Reel 7. Could we now return to your duties in the front line? And I believe that towards the end of May, you actually moved to a different position on the front line, to Packhort Wood.
Yes.
I wonder if you could describe... I believe the news of this you heard at whilst you were on one of your rest periods.
So we were going into Packhort Wood. Mm-hmm. Well, for several weeks now, we could all see this wood, you see, over on the right, and it had a sinister meaning to us. So it was often veiled in mist, and then we'd heard of raids in it and all that sort of thing, and how close they were to the Germans. So it was quite with some trepidation that we marched off for Packhort Wood. And I suppose we had to a couple of miles, and then as we neared it, but when we got actually into the wood, well, then the corporal said, "Keep your voices low." He said, "You're not far away from Jerry." And we fell through the trees, a little sort of track, because it wasn't a wood full of great big trees, etc., or forest in there. It was all young trees, many of them only saplings, excepting, say, on the left, I think there were a couple of tall conifers around. But no, it was mostly... Not many of the trees are more than about 15 feet high, I shouldn't think. Anyway, we found we got to a barricade, which was the post we were going to. I think it was number 4 post. And we were leaving the Somersets. And of course, our corporal and their corporal had a few words together in hushed tones, you see, and had them say, "Oh, yes, it's only about 20 yards away," or something like that. "And it's been pretty quiet. We haven't been... haven't disturbed him very much." And then they said, "Well, good luck," and off they marched, and we were on our own.
When you went into the line there, was it at night that you...
Oh, yes, it was always at night. Probably about 9 or... Let's see, May. No, I forget what time it gets dark in May, but it was always after dark. Probably 9 or 10 at night that we went into the wood. So you could really see nothing as we stood in this barricade of sandbags, probably about 10 feet wide, and only 2 or 3, well, wide, I mean, from side to side, and then from the front to the rear of it, probably about, just about 4 feet. And the sandbags were up to about as high as your shoulder, so that your head was always exposed unless you ducked down. But we had some camouflage in front of it, of branches and things like that. But it was a very eerie feeling, and it wasn't long after we'd been in that we could hear movements, and we heard a German sneezing. And I said, "My God, we're close."
Well, how did you feel when you did hear a German sneezing? Because that must have been the first time that you'd ever heard.
Yes. Well, pretty windy, really. And we certainly kept our voices low, and because the Germans were almost on top of us, really.
What arrangements were made for duty that night?
Well, two on, and the rest off. And I think we were two hours on, and 4 off, or 1 hour off, and I can't remember. It was something like in a rotor, you see, mm-hmm. And the others. They just had to sit on a ammunition box, you see, nowhere to lie down. When it was raining, you just had your capes on, you just stuck it. And of course, the same arrangements as regards toilets as we had when we were in the small post out in the open, because there was nowhere you could go, really.
I believe that you were moved to a different section in B Company, am I right?
Oh, yes, before, in Sensla Valley, we'd been told that I was moved into a Lewis Gun section. A chap named Quinn was to be number one, so he carried the Lewis Gun. Then we had a corporal, I think it was Corporal Gorringe, we had with us, and another thing was carried these big heavy panniers made of wasn't canvas, the same as those webbing belts were made of, slung over his shoulder. Those are very heavy, of course, and they had the rifle as well. And the Lewis gun was just propped up on the edge of the sandbags, because you see, the sandbags were two feet wide, probably, and so those gun was just resting on those, ready for any action. And then we had Mills bombs, of course. We had 5 or 6 Mills bombs, which we put in a little alcove in among the sandbags in case they were needed. Because the Mills bombs were, although they were small, you can't imagine the detonation, the noise of the explosion, simply deafening. And of course, they were like a little pineapple, and the metal just fragmented into little pieces about 3/4 of an inch by 1/4 of an inch. And as long as there was a little strip of metal which kept the detonating handle secure, but directly you let that go, well then a little spring hit down on the detonator. Well, not on the detonator, on the little fuse inside, and I think it gave you about 7 seconds, and then it detonated, and so the explosion. So directly you threw it, you see, you had 7 seconds before it exploded.
Must have been some problem throwing Mills bombs in a wood. Would that be so? Is there a danger of it hitting trees and bouncing down?
Well, in this case, it almost went through these trees and saplings. Well, you could have hit a tree, yes. But we didn't use them either. As I think I've mentioned, or will mention later, there was only one or two occasions where we actually used the Mills bombs.
Mm-hmm. Could you go on to describe I think it was the first night that you were there, or the second night that you were there, when in fact there was an attempted raid by the Germans to seize your post.
Yes. Well, the first of all, there was heavy shelling, shells going over our head to the support line. See, they couldn't shell the front line, so they shelled the support line in case of raid, so the support line can't come up to your assistance. And the machine gun bullets go over the heads of you in the front line, and the trajectory comes just over the heads of the ones in the support line, or against. They were also in barricades, only it was a long continuous one of sandbags. We couldn't dig down because of the wetness and the roots of the trees. And then this terrific din started, and then we heard the crackling of the woods. And
what time would this be?
Oh, I suppose it must have been probably about 2 or 3 in the morning, or after midnight sometime. And of course it wasn't really light enough to see you could sort of half see these people coming through. And then we threw Mills bombs, and we the Lewis gun backwards and forwards traversing, and then with the battalion headquarters sent up our SOSs to summon a barrage from our field guns. And then those opened out, so all the rushing of shells from behind Mount Burnish and into the German line, and shrapnel, which burst in the air above the German lines. And that anyway, it all, I don't know whether how many Germans were killed or scared, but it all quietened down again.
What part did you actually take in that action? What did you do yourself?
Just firing the rifle.
Could you see what you were firing at?
No. You just had to imagine about chest high. And then, of course, the Mills bombs were through, and that's... Anyway, nothing happened.
Did you see any... In the next morning, did you see any evidence of your action?
Didn't see anything, no.
Mm-hmm. Were you able to see where the German positions actually were in the woods?
Yes, I could see... It had to be pointed out, because they were camouflaged. You could see a place. It looks like a wall covered with moss, more or less, and you could just make out that it was sandbagged, and you could actually see a German standing there with his pork pie hat, not knowing that we were watching. Of course, we realised that if we could see them, they could see us, or vice versa. But when we were in this first time, I think it seemed to... They say there were Saxons in the line, and they're rather peace-loving, you see, not like Prussians. I think we more or less decided on let the sleeping dogs lie, although they didn't let us...
So if you saw them, you didn't shoot?
No. We should have done, of course, I suppose.
Yeah, it wasn't. Was it not an order? It was just a sort of a...
Just an order. It wasn't mentioned, really, except among ourselves.
Did that change at all?
Well, yes, the second time we were in Packet Wood. I'm not sure whether it was the second time we were in, or after we were in the observers, that we had to go in Packet Wood for a listening post. But it did very much change in a few months. The Germans were throwing bombs so that around this barricade, instead of having nothing, they had steel rods and covered with chicken wire so as the bombs wouldn't come into the post. And there was a lot of activity like that.
Why did Packet Wood change then from being very quiet to
probably orders from the Germans and a different... I think there were Prussians in the line, not so peace-loving as the Saxons.
Was it of any sort of strategic significance in that particular sector?
No, I don't think so. No, you see, it was just about less than 100 yards from the canal. Of course, it was, I suppose, really, if there was going to be an attack, it was a very good spot for assembling troops where they wouldn't be seen by aircraft. That was one thing, I imagine.
Because of the nature of the terrain, it must have been fairly easy for both the British and the Germans to sort of move around unobserved. Did that make it difficult to be on duty at night and so on?
No, well, of course, once you got behind the post, you could just, a few yards, you weren't observed at all. And we used to go to one corner of the wood where it ended at an angle, and we sort of... filling up sandbags in the middle of the morning without any, couldn't be seen at all. Mm-hmm. And halt them back, and then you're always building up the post in some way. And some people said that the sandbags weren't bulletproof, but I think they must have been, really, because they were about 2 feet thick.
How else did you build a post up? Did you try and camouflage it even more?
Yes. We used to go and cut branches from the saplings and put them round the front, and also stick them in so that they were all around the edge of the post. And we also put out what they call concertina wire, and that was worth just a hoop of wire, something like you see now when they're putting out in the garden. You just pull one end and it comes out like a concert. Put that in front of the post, you see, which is a great obstacle for anyone coming towards it. We did quite a bit of that at night. And then, of course, there was once when there was a sniper firing, so we had to keep our heads very low. As a matter of fact, we didn't take the precaution. We used to stand up there, could have easily been sniped. But we kept hearing this sniper firing, and then Corporal Scroggins said, "There, you can see him in that tree." And then we looked and said, "No, I can't see him." "Yes, look up there, you can see he's sort of camouflaged in green." So Quinn got the machine and said, "Oh, give him a berth." So got the machine and fired it at that. And then we saw him falling down the tree, like all green. So that did away with him.
Did the British send out snipers as well?
Well, they didn't, because the observers, if they wanted snipers, we were supposed to be snipers if they wanted snipers. Thank God they didn't either, because the first when I was first told I was going to the observers section, there might be some sniping to do. Well, that rather put me off, because snipers, of course, are in a very dangerous position, because once they're spotted, well, they're not left alone.
Did you actually go out on patrols in the wood itself?
No. Well, we went to... hardly a patrol, but I remember going out on our tummies as near as we could to the German posts, and could hear them talking, but I don't think we had enough courage to go right up to the post.
What was the purpose of that patrol?
To find out where the posts were, I suppose. And also, of course, because of the battalion were thinking of of raiding one of them. Well, they wanted, if they were going to have a raid, then they actually didn't have a raid on the German post, but it was suggested, because I was detailed for one once, which was cancelled. But then they wanted to know how far the German post was from our line and its location, find out as much as they could about it.
What was it like going out in the wood at night?
Oh, well, it's pretty nerve-wracking, of course. Because you you didn't know where the Germans were out coming your way as well. But I think with being very young, as I was and the others, I don't think that you would have the fear that I would have had if I was 30 or 40 years old going out. You know, the youth is pretty intrepid on the whole.
Was it very difficult to keep quiet when moving around in there?
No, just due care. No, it's quite right, because there weren't many dead twigs or anything, not having any very big trees. No, it wasn't. It wasn't difficult to keep quiet.
When you were on,
but there was this awful feeling that you were being watched, that you were so near the enemy, you see, that you were on their doorstep, actually. That was all the time you were there, you realised that sort of threat. I suppose they felt the same about having the British in front of them.
When you were on duty at night in your post, could you hear the enemy moving around?
Yes, occasionally. And you could sometimes hear their voices. You could hear them cry. I don't remember. Yes, once we heard some crawling, and we threw a couple of Mills bombs in the night. An officer came and asked what was the matter, and we said we heard some Germans crawling through the wood. Of course, the terrific explosion of those Mills bombs in the middle of the night. Everybody wondered, what was happening.
How long did you stay in the front line at Packholt Wood for?
4 or 5 days, and then we were relieved by people who had been in the support, you see. And our own battalion, because we had a certain stretch of front, both frontline support and reserve, was all King's Own Royal Lancasters. Well, when we got into the support line, which was similar to the front line as regards defences, excepting it was, instead of just being one post, it extended perhaps 20, 30 yards, I can't just remember. And, of course, terrifically, the leaf, we could just talk in our ordinary voices and not mind about the mess tin making a noise. And it was a terrific relief to feel safe, as we felt, and not this awful feeling of the enemy being yards away from you. And I remember one night, there was terrific, I should think, all German machine guns suddenly opened, and the fire was coming right over the top of our support line. Well, that to us meant, they're going to do something in the front line, you see, keeping the support, and there was also some shell fire onto the support as well. So as to keep, in case they were raiding the front line, that it would keep the support from going up, which was, of course, the duty of the term support meant to support the front line. And anyway, after this, then the SOS went up from the front line of these hanging lights, and that meant all the field guns from Mont Burnish and all burst into a barrage, and terrific din of shells going all over the German lines, and an awful lot of shrapnel shells bursting in the air over their lines, but still this terrific barrage of machine guns over us. And then, of course, it petered out and went down, and the corporal said, there's probably been a raid on the front line, but we didn't do anything till dawn, and then he went up to look and found the post we had been in had been raided and they'd all been killed. I don't know, there might have been one of them taken prisoner, I never found that out, but